So hello and welcome to the worst date news ever. My name is Greg Knox and I'm joined by Tom Dennett Kirk.
Hey.
And Scott Priestley.
Hello.
Cool. So I've had these guys on the show before, and if you want to check those shows out, you can do so on iTunes and on Spotify and on YouTube and on a couple of other places as well. So I brought you guys on the show because I did the last show by myself, so I thought I'd overcompensate.
Yeah.
On the next show.
And balance it out.
The reason that I brought you on is because we're going to be talking about The Evil Dead.
Hooray!
Hooray! Which is a great film. And one that myself and Tom have actually covered before.
Yeah.
But
getting a little bit sick of Evil Dead.
Yeah, but we thought, fuck it, we'll just do it again, because why not? So, in case you have not, for whatever reason, seen The Evil Dead before, I find that very hard to believe that anyone is going to listen to the show who hasn't seen it before. But in case you haven't, we're going to be talking quite heavy spoilers and shit. So, The Evil Dead is directed by Sam Raimi, who is quite a well-known director now, mostly for directing Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2 and Spider-Man 3.
Mm-hmm.
Less said about Spider-Man 3, the better.
We don't talk about Spider-Man 3.
The best Spider-Man film.
he also directed Drag Me to Hell.
Hooray!
Which I quite liked. I thought it was quite cool. Very similar.
Very old school Sam Raimi, yeah.
Yeah, and A Simple Plan, which I quite liked. Very similar to Fargo. And yeah, it's quite interesting. So this film also, it's mainly known for introducing Bruce Campbell into the world, his main character that he's best known for, Ash.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bruce Campbell is quite a well-known sort of B-movie actor. He's also been in films like Maniac Cop, which I like.
Yeah. Yep.
And Bubba Hotep.
And the Spider-Man trilogy.
Yeah.
Including the third.
Very good in the third.
Yeah.
although, I mean, they are only really cameos, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. And also in this film is Ellen Sandweiss, who plays Cheryl, who is Ash's sister. She is she's credited in the remake of The Evil Dead as a voice, but I'm not entirely sure when that would be. I haven't seen the remake for about a year, so apparently she's in there. And also she's in Oz the Great and Powerful, as are the other two actresses in this film. I think they're in a small cameo-like role in that film somewhere.
Apparently. What a weird connection between The Evil Dead and The Oz.
Yeah, although it's directed by Sam Raimi, so that would be why they're in it.
That film.
The other two actresses are Betsy Baker, who plays Linda, who's Ash's girlfriend, and Teresa Tilly, who is Shelley, who is the girlfriend of Scotty, who's played by Richard DeMannencourt. I think that's what his guy's name is. Now, quite interestingly, Richard DeMannencourt and Teresa Tilly are not credited under those names. They are actually credited under pseudonyms. And the reason for that is because they were members of the Screen Actors Guild, and this was a non-union production, and they thought they would get in trouble.
Naughty, naughty.
If they appeared in this film. So that's why they're in, go under pseudonyms.
And wouldn't they think there's a possibility that there might be a slightly dodgy film that they were going to make? So they took their boyfriends with them, just in case it turned out Sam Raimi was making a snuff film or a porno.
Yeah, there's that story about how people thought they were making a snuff film. As you do, you would have open casting.
So Sam Raimi had to completely change his film, and it's now no longer a snuff film, which is a shame.
Yeah. And interestingly, this cost only $350,000, which
nothing.
Is fuck all, really.
It's chump change.
Exactly. So, Scott. We'll
yes.
pick you. Scott, what happens in The Evil Dead, for those of you who don't know?
Okay, so let's say a gang of teenagers go for a nice relaxing break to a cabin in the woods.
Yep.
Hilarity ensues.
They do things they're not supposed to do. They go places they're not supposed to go. And yes, exactly. Hilarity ensues.
It doesn't follow the trope of like, oh, they're smoking weed and having premarital sex. They're pretty innocent.
Yeah.
They just get fucked with.
Although we did notice that there's a hell of a lot of moonshine being plugged.
There's a lot of moonshine being drunk in the car, at the dinner table, you know.
And seeing as I've got an unofficial election of having moonshine as my official drink of 2019, because as we established, it's going to be a terrible year, so you might as well start drinking the hard stuff. maybe it's a moral tale about the dangers of drinking moonshine.
Maybe they imagined everything that happened to them. They were
and well, maybe what made me laugh was we when we were watching the well, if you listen to the 98 director's commentary, Sam Raimi's really worried that everything he thought was timeless, fashion and what teenagers got up to, was has kind of, even though he was trying to avoid them looking dated by not putting them over stylized 70s, 80s clothes, he's saying, oh, well, it's kind of all gone out of date anyway. But they're all wearing like lumberjack shirts, double denims, corduroys, and they're drinking out of jam jars.
Yeah.
They look like the most current hipsters.
And nothing, no, Moonshine never goes out of date.
Never goes out
of date. It was never in date.
Indeed. Now, the first thing I wanted to ask, it's quite interesting. So, Scott, you called it Cabin in the Woods, which evoked that specific kind of phrase. Now, that's what the film is known for now. But in 1981, obviously, that wouldn't have existed. So, what is The Evil Dead? Like, how do we categorise it other than that? So, to me, you've got it's a haunted house of sorts.
Yeah.
You've got possession. And it's sort of like a zombie film as well, in a way. It's not like they're undead and they've come back to life, but they are basically unkillable.
Yeah.
Although it's not really true zombies. It's more like demons, the Lamberto Bava film.
Yeah.
They're kind of more like that. And there's also the comedic elements as well. So what do you guys think?
Well, demonic possession, I guess. Demonic possession is what it is. Then, as you said, they're not zombies. They don't really die. They just get possessed and then won't die. So it's horror comedy is the easiest way to categorise it, I guess.
Yeah.
But what is it specifically about, demonic possession?
They got the whole kind of talking in a sing-songy kind of voice, kind of from The Exorcist kind of vibe. And, you know, the kind of playful thing that demons kind of have over zombies. They're kind of like, you know, where, you know, Freddy is like, Chuckle, Mr. Chuckles. And Jason is your silent, strong silent type.
Well, apparently Jason's a dead eye, but we'll get onto that at some point.
So I always enjoy a demon, because they're always up for a good chuckle.
Yeah.
You know.
And you can get away with whatever you want with demons, because nobody really knows what's that about. There's rules to, like, zombies and stuff. But demon loses its head, well, or a person possessed by a demon loses their head, they just keep going, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what I like about this film and why it kind of fits in the supernatural horror film is that this is kind of one of those films where eventually the rules of the real world kind of become, they become twisted, as you can hear my cat in the background.
I disagree!
The house is demonic possessed, scratching at the door.
Yeah, exactly. It's an evil cat sort of trying
evil
to...
Evil cat.
Yeah. But, for example, like in the second half of the film, like, for example, one of my favourite shots in The Evil Dead is where Ash puts his hand into the mirror and it becomes like water. Now, obviously, that wouldn't happen in real life.
No.
Unless you're maybe on really strong hallucinogenic drugs.
And even then, you've just punched a mirror.
maybe there's a scene somewhere where he's chowing down on mushrooms and he's just killed everyone and they're all innocent. And the shot you don't see is the police going, "What happened here, son?" "Well, the bridge is curled up." "No, it's not."
Yeah, that would actually have been quite an interesting ending, I think, if like it all turned out it was some sort of drug-induced hallucination.
Isn't there a horror film? Isn't there Shrooms or something?
Crap Irish film.
Isn't that the same kind of thing? Like that? I haven't seen it, but I don't know, just imagine it.
It's basically a bunch of teenagers go to the woods camping and then they take magic mushrooms and then bad shit goes down.
But I do agree with what you're saying about, like, the rules go out the window. And that, as I said, that only really happens with demonic possession stuff. Because, like, so what, have the demons possessed the mirror and turned the mirror into liquid? You can do whatever you want with demons. You can get, there are no rules, really. Whereas if you did categorise this as a zombie film, zombies aren't going to change the mirror into, you know, water.
No, this is kind of one of those films that would annoy people who want everything to be realistic and rational. No names.
No names.
But, like, yeah, because of things like that, because there are things that happen that you can't explain rationally at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just happens cause.
It looks cool.
And yeah, exactly. It looks fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like I said.
Yeah, like that, specifically that mirror thing. So that, it doesn't serve a purpose, even story-wise. It's not like his hand then there's a mirror hand that comes alive or anything. It's just a scene put in for the sake of it.
Wah.
Yeah. It's just there because it looks cool. Done.
Yeah. So we all like this film.
Yes. You love it.
Absolutely love it.
Fucking
okay.
Love it.
That's pretty obvious. Okay, what is it that we like about the film specifically? I'll start with Scott on this one.
I would say just like you can not necessarily, so you can tell a cheap film sometimes, you know, oh, that's cheap because they all sat in the same room.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the effects look terrible. I don't think any of the, and whereas like, you know, if you watch it on repeated viewings or you watch it with a director's commentary, you say, oh, he didn't get out of shot. Oh, I can see the hand flip. I don't see that stuff. Mm-hmm. It kind of, you know, you can see where the walls end and there's no ceiling, things like that. And they get pointed out to you in featurettes. And no, I think anyone's harder on that film than the people that made it.
Yes.
But they've got a great sense of humour about it. And it kind of doesn't matter. It's like seeing a really good band, and you know, maybe they're not the best at playing their instruments, but it's got a real kind of punk aesthetic, and you just takes you in, and you like, I don't really care that they've got no money, or that, you know, you could argue, you could nitpick and say, well, the characters are all very bland, and maybe that's going to like the aesthetic of how he didn't want them to age. I kind of forget about them, and I kind of lose track, even though there's like five of them. Who's died and where, and
I lose track of the names and stuff.
The names and things like that. Yeah. Obviously, I remember Scotty because he's got my name. But
that's, yeah, shit.
That's the only reason I remember him.
I call them all Tom.
And like, I think Tom would say, like, when you are talking about Ash, this isn't the people's Ash. This is yeah. Ash version 1.0. And Tom pointed out, it's like when people kind of get freaked out about how ugly and unappealing Gizmo in the original Gremlins. Everyone remembers Gremlins 2, mm-hmm. Gizmo, and everyone remembers Evil Dead 2, Ash. So,
yeah, I think, I mean, the film is iconic. Any beginner's guide to fucking cult cinema, if it doesn't mention Evil Dead, it mentions Rocky Horror Show. Those are the two ones that get forced down your throat over and over again. But with Evil Dead, I'd say for very bloody good reasons. It's very creative. When you watch it, you mention the budget. And anyone who does, if you just do very basic research into how they make this film, this is proper guerrilla filmmaking. They just had like cameras stuck on bits of wood and running through the forest, and all that kind of stuff is just like, but yeah, as you said, it doesn't show. It doesn't look like a shit film. You can tell there's just so much creativity that's gone into it.
Yeah, I mean, that shot, which I've never seen in any other film apart mm-hmm. from the Evil Dead sort of moving through the wood shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is just a camera nailed to a block of wood and yeah. then just running with it.
And not to go off topic, but I watched Bird Box over Christmas, and there's a lot of those kind of like shots, and it's just money and gloss takes mm-hmm. away, takes that edge. And I think when we watched it most recently, and Tom said, oh, that's cool, you know, the whoosh when it looks at them through the window, and a flash of lightning. And that's the little things that Sam Raimi, I think it's called like the moosh shot. He's got a name for it. And it's just that little bit of artistic kind of flair he gives to stuff. And you don't notice it, but without it, it would be bland.
And what's cool is I really buy into everything in the film. I don't feel like it's two men running through the woods with a camera and a bit of wood. I feel like it is a demon sweeping through the trees. It's just everything clicks so well in this film. The groaning of the, I guess they're demons, let's call them demons for now. And the swooshing, it all moves so well. I just think it's very well put together.
Yeah. I mean, what I would say about and Scott dies in the background.
Yeah.
You're right, Scott.
That's because I badmouthed Bird Box and the demons are out to get me.
Go.
Sorry.
That's all right.
I actually thought it was quite average. I didn't mind it at all.
Yeah, I mean, I really like those shots as well. I think this film is so well shot. Mm-hmm. It is, like Scott said, and I agree with this, it's like, if you're being picky, say you only look at it from a story perspective, the story is very thin.
Yeah.
If you look at it, it's basically five people, they go to a cabin in the woods, and then they find something, and then they don't really do anything. And you know, apart from Ash, who, like we mentioned, and we'll go on to this in a little bit, he's basically not the Ash of Evil Dead 2, or especially Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter because this is definitely, and I'm going to sound so fucking pretentious saying this, but whatever, it's a very auteurist film. It's a film that's definitely been shaped by its director.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, so you've got sort of all the creative shots. So one of my favourite shots is the shot that goes from behind Bruce Campbell's head all the way to the front. So yeah, it literally flips 180 degrees over his head. I think that's really clever. Shot with a mirror, like I mentioned. The various different tracking shots. One of my favourite shots is where the demon is looking through the different windows outside the cabin. Yeah, yeah. So it goes from Cheryl to Scotty and Shelley, and then it goes to Ash, I think, or I can't remember the exact order, but that's really good. And I like the sound design as well. I think the sound design is awesome, especially like with the that noise.
The film feels very alive.
Yeah,
like when doors are swinging open, you can almost feel the breeze and feel the speed of things. And when things start to get really grotesque, well, there's blood spewing and pus spewing. It's very
porridge.
You can feel it. You can feel the qualia, if you will, to be equally as pretentious. You can feel the film, you know, which you don't get with any. You know, there may be other films that have more gore, but you don't feel it.
Yeah, it's got dirt under its fingernails, isn't it? Yeah.
Within the woods, even more so, because that was made for even less money than this, if you can believe it. And Within the Woods is actually quite interesting. So how they justify the demon possession in that is old. It's an Indian burial ground. So Bruce Campbell accidentally digs something up and then he gets possessed, basically.
That's
so
it's Indian burial grounds for you.
Yeah. Don't fuck with Indian burial grounds.
Have such a bad reputation, don't they?
Exactly. Yeah, but they have a much, much more creative way of justifying it in this. Mm-hmm. In this, and what I like about this is, with a lot of low budget films, there's way too much exposition, or there's way too much characters talking when they can't really act because it's a low budget film. Whereas in this, they have literally the bare minimal amount of exposition. And the way the exposition is delivered is actually quite clever because it's on the recording and stuff like that. You don't have characters having these like really weird conversations that you wouldn't have in everyday life.
I love those bullshit conversations.
I heard about this 20,000 years ago or whatever.
You know, like the classic example, going off topic slightly, you know, like Wayne's World, when the limo driver explains everything that's going to happen, and you're like, it's a good thing he was there to tell us everything. So yeah, you're right. In this, they have the recording. The recording is just literally the professor, the archaeologist, say, right, this is all you need to
know.
This
is literally all you need to know, exactly.
And just to briefly go off topic again, you were saying, like, yeah, it doesn't matter that this doesn't have much of a story or much character development. To go slightly off topic, if you were to talk about a film like Suspiria, it's very similar of, it's such a beautifully crafted film that it doesn't matter that it's a ballet school run by witches. You know, it's, some films are not about their story. Some films are it's, they're beautifully well constructed, and that's good enough.
And I think that's a really good comparison, like if you watch Suspiria and she's going to the airport, she's arrives at the airport and she gets the cab, and when she's just walking through the airport departure gates, just the music and the rain, you know she's going to a bad place. Yeah. And equally, when you see those guys driving in, they're in the car and they're having yucks and moonshine, and then just a very silent drive with no dialogue up to the cabin. And the thump of the hanging chair.
Yeah.
It's show, not tell. It's building up. And you're thinking, this isn't going to be good.
Yeah. Now, I suppose I tried asking this to Rhea when we covered this film on the main configuration. But, I mean, this film, like we mentioned, only cost $350,000.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many low-budget films now that are nowhere near as good as this. Yeah. So why is this one so much better? Is it purely because of Sam Raimi, or is there more to it than that?
Yeah, I think it's... anyone can make a film. I haven't made a film. But anyone can make a film now. And if, you know, we were going to go out and grab a bunch of, you know, entry-level equipment, or just even our iPhones or what have you, we can make a fairly standard... But I think he had a vision, and it was kind of like, how do we film this? How do we do this?
Mm-hmm.
So, still strapping things to a bit of woods, beating the hell out of Bruce Campbell, getting his little brother to do stuff. It was it's kind of like it's got a real sense of camaraderie, and you can tell that they're not having a good time, and they're going through some very harrowing, freezing cold, being covered in sticky syrup. But they're all obviously they would walk away if they didn't have this love and camaraderie, and I think that's what helps make the film as well. There's a lot of times you see people. And you think, oh, they look like they're having a good time. It's like, yeah, they shouldn't be having a good time because this one's bloody terrible.
Yeah, Mark Kermode has that thing, like, the better a time that the people had making the film, the worse the film.
That's a good theory.
If you compare it to, say, something like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, apparently that was a fucking nightmare to make.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The heat, the smell of the meat rotting. If you know, there's various contradictory... anecdotes about the film, about like when she gets her finger cut, apparently she didn't know that was going to happen, so when she's screaming, apparently that's real, like proper suffering.
Can't believe that.
Suffering for your art. Filmmaking, maybe now it's all quite paint by numbers. Everyone's seen Evil Dead 1,000 times and they're trying to replicate it, whereas when they were making that film, I don't think the film would have worked without Sam Raimi, because he proper MacGyvered his way through this movie. You know, how am I going to make this shot? I'm going to do this. Fuck it, we'll just have to, as you say, tie this thing to a bit of word, or you're just going to have to get punched in the face, Bruce. Sorry.
There's a bit you don't even think twice about where Ash swings around and fires a shotgun through a glass window. And Sam Raimi's like, yep, that's real glass, and that's a real shotgun being fired at a real cameraman.
Yeah, you couldn't make this now, you know. And just, again, to go slightly off topic, I think I've said this to you before, Greg, with regards to Roger Corman films. When he does all the dream sequences in all his Edgar Allan Poe adaptations, he said in interviews, I had to kind of do that because I couldn't do it any other way. So I had to improvise. So people like Sam Raimi and Roger Corman, the reason why they're held up as these great auteurs of cult cinema... it's because they can improvise and make something good. And not everyone can. And maybe that's why some low-budget films suck and some other ones are good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, definitely, like I say, just the amount of ingenuity just in the shots, really, more than anything else. Because it's a cabin, they've got a smoke machine. They've got a really good smoke machine.
Just one of them actually smoking, they said, didn't they?
Yeah, and, just the... Now, it's quite interesting, so I find the makeup quite good, even though it's clearly low budget. They probably have better, in inverted commas, makeup now. And they were talking about sort of the contact lenses, how they could only wear them for 15 minutes at a time, because they're really bulky.
Horrible, they sound horrible. Yeah,
I hate contact lenses.
Yeah, especially with, like, no running water on set.
Yeah, in the director's commentary, didn't they say they had to wash their hands with coffee?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, fucking hell.
Definitely.
Good times.
Yeah, good times.
But I really like the big kind of death scene at the end, the claymation scene. I really like that. It reminds me of Trapdoor quite a bit, actually.
Got a bit of Trapdoor, a bit of Basket Case thrown in, you know, that kind of,
Yeah. But it looks, well, I mean, it's not, how am I going to put this? Like, you can look at it and kind of think, ropey. Well, it looks a bit ropey. Yeah, it's a bit, you know, rough around the edges. But I think it offers the film a certain charm.
Oh, definitely.
I think I don't have a problem with the remake, but if you were to compare the two, perhaps now things are too clean and polished and too good. And that little ropiness, that gives it its edge, as you say. And also, you know, again, demonic possession. It can look whatever the fuck it wants to look like. Yeah. I don't know what somebody transforming from a basically a zombie into a demon is going to look like. You can make it look however you want.
Yeah, and a CG, if you did that, like, in a CG, it probably would be different shades of brown.
Better would be worse. Slime.
But this is, it's quite primary colours, isn't it? Like, I think that's the trapdoor thing. You see turquoises and reds and goopy yellows and, you know, it's great.
And like I said earlier, my thing about saying, like, you can sort of feel the film, because it is that kind of stop-motion animation, claymation, you can feel it a little bit more than if it were just polished CGI or insanely good special effects.
It's tactile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The word that I like.
I like the guy who did this, and if you compare it to, like, Tom Savini stuff, you know, all that kind of shit, old school special effects, yes, it's a little bit ropey, but that gives it its charm, as you say.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think if you watch a film from the 70s or the 80s, because of how it's been shot, it's got that low-budget feel, which makes it feel more real.
Yeah.
Even if the things that happen in the film aren't real at all, couldn't happen.
Yeah.
it does feel more real, especially because it's, you know, it's an exploitation film. Mm-hmm. It's, you've got no big stars in it at all. It could be anyone. So they're not pretty kind of famous people who, you know, could be a model, basically. Whereas now, I mean, not to disparage sort of modern horror films, because I like quite a few modern horror films now, but because everything is so clean and so polished, there's no way you could mistake it for like a real thing at all. Whereas here, you know, it could be, you know, someone shooting something on an actual camera, almost like a home video.
You have to admire the effort it took to make that claymation thing. You watch it and you're just like, wow, somebody's painstakingly done 100 different shots just to make that bubble burst or that bit of
It's not like an easy get out, is it?
No.
And like they were saying about the, when the Achilles tendon gets infected, that's like hand-painted animation. Yeah. That's great.
So even if you don't, you know, find it scary or whatever, you can still admire it just for the skill. Yeah.
Basically, if you laugh at it, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although it's quite interesting you say that. Now, I was going to bring this up in a minute, but you've said, Tom, I'm pointing at here, that pointing doesn't really work in a format.
This guy. Because,
this dude. Now, you've mentioned quite a few times, it's almost like it's one of your stock things, how Sam Raimi, he had to make this film comedic because he didn't think people would take it seriously. It's a straight horror film, which is why the remake is a straight horror film. There isn't any comedy in it whatsoever. So, I don't think this is that funny, though, compared to, especially to, like, Evil Dead 2 or Army of Darkness. The comedy, there is comedy there, but I don't think it's some laugh riot. You know, I'm not going to bust my sides watching this.
Yes.
No, I was going to say, a horror-y. I think I now have to go and wash my eyes and mouth out with bleach.
I think he put comedy in it so that... Yeah, like I said, so it's not buckets of comedy. He does that when he gets to round two, but there's enough comedy trickled in that he can kind of have his cake and eat it. He can have his, because this is a weird in sort of the category of horror comedies. This is a weird horror comedy because most horror comedies are very nudge nudge, wink wink, like, you know, laugh now. Whereas this, if you knew nothing about this film and you watched it, you'd be a little bit confused, as I think the distributors were. You go, am I supposed to be finding this funny, or am I supposed to be finding this scary, or is it a bit of both? So, yeah, it's not like balls to the walls comedy, waka waka, but he's definitely having his cake and eating it.
Yeah, it's a Three Stooges style of comedy we don't really get in this country.
And as the series progresses, he's clearly listen to the people, and the people liked the comedy elements, and that's why 2 is basically 1 but with more comedy, and 3 is fucking batshit crazy. All Three Stooges comedy in that third one.
Yeah, and also, like, Bruce Campbell isn't particularly funny in this one.
No.
He plays dead straight, and obviously they didn't know what they were doing, but the humour, I think, when I said, like, if you laugh at it, you're an idiot, I mean, if you laugh at it derisively, like, look how silly, like, look, you're not getting it, but it's a film to be laughed along with. It's the whole thing is like, it's like in Texas Chainsaw where the grandpa's dropping the mallet. What he's trying to do is horrible, but you're shrieking with laughter, and just like when they're getting possessed and they're laughing at Ash, I find that creepy. It's just as creepy as like relentless screaming, like weird, off, uncanny.
Yuck! Yuck! Now, it's quite interesting. So you brought up the remake.
Yes.
Now, what I have heard you review this film before. Yeah. And one of the things that you said, which is quite interesting, is that you know people who watched the remake who love this film, and they didn't like the remake. Yeah. And the consensus was they didn't like the remake because it was straight, like, serious. It was no comedy in it.
Yeah.
Now, I kind of agree with that, but that is like a surface level thing for me. What I think that the remake doesn't have, and I quite like the remake. I don't dislike the remake at all. I think it has certain things that are really, really good in it. It's quite well directed, I think, is that this film is really intense. This has a certain level of intensity that very, very few other films have at all, particularly in horror. Like, it's pretty relentless. The tension, especially, even when things aren't happening on screen, like people, you know, getting their limbs cut off or stabbed or set on fire, etc. There's a lot of tension because you don't know what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of really actual good jump scares in this,
yeah,
that I think anyway. So that's my thing, is that the remake, although it's okay, it doesn't have the same level of intensity
mm-hmm.
as this one, and that's kind of what lets it down.
I think, in terms of why people didn't like the remake, I think the lack in comedy isn't the main reason why people who don't like it didn't like it. I think that's more secondary. I think the first reason is hardcore fanboys not liking the concept of a remake, period. I think that's the first reason why people were turned off by it. Yes, it doesn't have the comedy, but I don't think that's the major thing. I think because the first one is a no-budget film, they don't give a fuck about offending people. Whereas with the remake, it's in the hands of Hollywood. It has to be a little bit more polished and more crowd-pleasing and therefore safer. So even though it has lots of gore and some fucked-up deaths, it maybe loses that tension that the original one has because the original didn't have any boundaries. And also the original, as we've said, because everything's a bit more gritty, because of the nature of the fact it was low budget, and you can feel the actors are cold, and you can feel their pain when they're out, you know. And Bruce Campbell shooting at the cameraman with a rifle and stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of tension in the original for many different reasons.
Mm, which you will get in a low-budget film anyway, just because you have to be intuitive, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this is obviously worst date movies. Now, there is only really one scene in particular that stands out as to why someone might not think this is a very good date movie, and that is the tree rape scene. Now, I...
Don't worry, Scott.
Good to have thanks. I was hoping you hand me that.
Yeah. Now, I... Because it's a tree, or it's the forest itself, mm-hmm. so it's not like I Spit in Your Grave or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's not exactly pleasant, but it doesn't bother me. I think that's how they probably try to get around it, because it's, you know, she's got, well, a branch up her vagina, mm-hmm. I guess, in literal terms. Yeah. Anyway, interestingly, when I reviewed this before with Rhea Fend, my co-host on the Lament Configuration, she had a big problem with this, and that's why she thought the film probably should have been a video nasty. Anything kind of sexual violence mm-hmm. related she had a problem with. But anyway, what do you guys think about this? I mean, I think the secret itself is quite imaginative. I can see why maybe they wouldn't want to put this in a film now. Although quite interesting that in the remake, they do have a very similar scene to this in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not as blatant, if you put it that way, but it's still a character being attacked by the forest, getting, you know, tied up by branches that have come to life and then being violated in some way, although you don't actually see it in this time.
Yeah, I think it's just watching it again, it has quite an impact, and that the effect of making the audience uncomfortable is definitely achieved. It's quite impactful, and it's quite you kind of, it's just like the kind of more real, like everyone's like caught themselves on a thistle or a branch or being scratched, and you know, the actress, it was actually scratched and hurt and frozen. So it was Sam Raimi said, she was a real trooper, because, you know, most people were like, no way. You know what it's like to, you know, to get injured, like falling on, it bloody hurts. And it's just, and it's that kind of, the fantastical is happening. Mm-hmm. This would never happen. But you also, you know what it's like if you get, like, you know, if you imagine like a rose thorn scratching you near the eye, you still got that kind of, you recoil it. And the shot with the branch just heading straight for her was made to people sit up and go, whoa, we're not in Kansas anymore. This mm-hmm. is, they're not messing around. I think post then they've kind of said, well, it's kind of like, I liken it to, say, like how the Beastie Boys apologise like for the lyrics in their first album being like quite misogynistic, and like, oh, we were playing characters. And I think there is a sense of like they were playing a role, like, oh, what can we do to out Craven, mm-hmm. Wes Craven? What can we, how can we freak people out? And sexual violence is like one of those things. I don't sit there thinking, oh, this is one of my favourite things. I don't really like the scene either. I mean, I like the way it's, can't figure out the way it's done, but I'm kind of like, you're just like a bunch of guys going, you know, and they've said it's a bit sniggering, a bit crass, and they wouldn't do it again, which like Greg said, I don't understand why they did it in the remake. If Sam Raimi is like, one of the things I would change about Evil Dead is that scene, for the reasons we kind of mentioned and was mentioned on your earlier show. And I don't know why they, with going back to the remake, I don't know why that needs remaking if the person who was kind of, is he executive producing it?
I think he is,
pretty much said, I didn't like that. And for me, just to take it back to the remake, the problem I had is that, why would I want to see an Evil Dead film without Ash? And it's like, he's kind of like the flip of Michael Myers, Jason, Freddy. He's not the bad guy killing him, but he's the... You don't go and see an Evil Dead film. Yeah, the makeups are great, but you don't get disappointed if a certain Evil Dead or a Deadite isn't in it.
Yeah.
That's the problem they've got with remaking. And obviously the TV show is kind of like... Everyone's kind of like okay with the remake now because the TV show gave us like hours and hours and hours of what the fanboys wanted.
In terms of the tree rape scene, it... Okay, if you can... Okay, you mentioned I Spit in Your Grave. If you think about other controversial rape scenes in films such as Straw Dogs and things like that, the rape is integral to the story. Mm. Whereas here, there's just a tree rape. If you were to take it out, it wouldn't matter. So in that sense, I think that's why people talk about it so much. Well, when I say that's the reason, what I mean is it doesn't need to be there, so therefore it's kind of like, why did you bother?
No.
And by the sounds of it, they've said since, yeah, we didn't really need that, and so we've kind of, we're stuck with a rape scene we didn't really want.
No, you know? It's obviously titillation, isn't it? And it...
By the sounds of it, in the director's commentary, when they were making it, because I think they said they shot it over several days, and basically when they put it all together, it was more intense than they had intended it to be. So therefore, they kind of, maybe they don't regret so much the rape scene, but how intense it was. Because in actual fact, most of that rape scene isn't the rape. The actual penetration is instant, and then it's over. It's all the tying up and stuff.
Mm.
So it's an uncomfortable scene that, by the sounds of it, didn't need to be there, and they didn't intend for it to be so uncomfortable. It's a bit of a mess.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say is so that character gets possessed.
Mm-hmm.
Following that, but all the other characters that get possessed, it seems to happen like out of blue, out of nowhere. Like,
I think like they're almost like zombie possession. They get stabbed. Like basically, there has to be some kind of, they get bit penetration, or stabbed. Yeah. You know, where she's the only one, as you say, who doesn't. So that it's in something like I Spin Your Grave. And I don't want to say you can justify the rape, but the rape is integral to what happens in the storyline. Whereas the rape here is just stuck in.
It's just
for an immature joke.
Happens. Yeah. Yeah, so you could almost call this like a body horror film in a way, because people's flesh is being contorted and changed based on what happens and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a body horror film in the same way that like Tetsuo is, or the same way that like Videodrome is,
no.
But you can kind of, there's undertones,
shall
we say. Okay, cool. I mean, other than that, I mean, the only other things I can think of that might not make it a good date movie is just, like I said, the intensity of the film itself, because... It's intense, man. And also, there are certain scenes that are quite violent. Like, one of the characters, when they're possessed, cut or bites their own hand off. Example, and stuff like that. Okay. So, is this everyone's favourite Evil Dead movie, or do you prefer Evil Dead 2?
That is a bloody good question.
Army of Darkness. Fuck off.
I was really not looking forward to that question. Because I flip-flop all the time from one to two, back and forth.
Solid 3, like the Spider-Man movies.
I always go for the third. Terminator 3, Spider-Man 3.
Friday the 13th,
Part 3 in 3D.
I sense you're mocking the thirds.
It's funny that, as you've picked up on, Sam Raimi's has said at various points, if the remake was me making it the way I kind of would do if I had a big budget. But he's kind of done that before when he did Evil Dead 2. Because that's basically...
What is Evil Dead 2?
Like, you know, that's an ongoing question. That's perhaps a follow-up question. What is Evil Dead 2? Is it a reboot, a remake, a reimagine? You know, take your pick. But he kind of already had his remake with Evil Dead 2. And in some ways, a lot of the cool stuff you remember, as you were saying about Ash, and people misremembering Ash, it's not an Evil Dead. and Evil Dead 2, you get pretty much all the cool shit from Evil Dead, but then some more, and you get like the cool chainsaw stuff and the hand and all the catchphrases
and moose head and all that stuff.
Laughing moose head. When you see evil, like, my mind also gets the two confused at various bits. So the first one, when they open the door and you see the moose head, you think, oh, that's the moose head that's going to laugh. No, it fucking isn't. That happens in part two.
Totally.
So you get all the cool stuff in the second one, but then when I go back and watch the first one, I'm like, is it because it's the first one you kind of feel obliged to like it more?
Because Ash is quite a weedy, weak character.
He's proper shit, isn't he?
He can get defeated by a very lightweight bookcase.
Yeah. On more than one occasion.
Yeah, until everyone else dies, he's not stepping up at all. He's straight up, I'm sitting in the corner.
Yeah, this is slightly pre sort of slasher explosion, so the final girl wasn't really a proper thing yet at this point. And I think the way that the female characters are presented, not to go all like, misogynistic or whatever, but like, the female characters are quite thin. So the only character who you think could possibly be the hero is Scotty.
Yeah, really. Scotty is the hero of the film, basically.
He speaks a lot of sense. He's got a good name, too.
Exactly, yeah. Like you said, about halfway through the film, and then it has to be Ash, and he's kind of having to do it by default because everyone else is possessed or dead.
Yeah, and he doesn't really do a lot before then. He kind of like, he's just like mooning over his girlfriend, buying her trinkets, hiding in the corner. People are screaming in terror, in like pain, and he's just sat there.
Yeah,
and just it's I like it's the maybe the filmmakers were kind of like, yeah, we're going to make Bruce Hicks, he's going to be the big horror star. And for the first half of it, the interesting point is like seeing this for the first time without seeing it through the lens of like VHS or being able to go straight into Evil Dead 2 or Army of Darkness and not if you'd seen, say, like the comics or the video games, I check out the original. Watching the original Evil Dead cold, not knowing anything about anything, which is kind of impossible now, you'd be like, come on, Scotty. He's got the axe, he's got the plan. And you'd just be like, oh, kill this guy in the blue shirt. He's just a complete blouse.
Why is he lasting so long? I mean, it's funny you mentioned the final girl thing. He does the final girl thing, where the final girl is always pretty much a wet blanket right up until the last third, where she grows a pair and starts taking on the killer.
Taking on
the killer. And that's basically what Ash is doing. I mean, you know, Ash is even... There's a thing... There's a lot written on Final Girls and how they often have... what's the word?
It's Men, Women, and Chainsaws by Carol J. Clark.
Yeah, she writes something about their names are always things like Ash, because they can be interchangeable as both a man and a woman's name. So he is kind of a final girl, final boy. He follows a lot of the tropes that you get. I was going to say something else. Oh, just in defense of the second film as well, you mentioned about the character, we've mentioned several times about the characters in the first one being very thin. The characters in the second film are great. That redneck and Bobby Joe.
Bobby Joe!
Like, you love those characters in the second film. They're hilarious. You want them to die. They're just brilliant, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's proper scary, the second one as well.
The second one has proper scares, loads of cool, just fucking awesome moments in the second one.
You think you've got to have Evil 2 Deads.
Evil
2 Dead to Evil, starring Steven Seagal and DMX. You've got to have that as the top one, because basically everything you know is in that one. A bit like, say, like Nightmare 3. Everything you think you love about Freddy is in that film, not necessarily 1, 2, or any of the ones
after. It's coming for you.
Yeah, it's kind of 3-4. But I would say it's got everything's there, isn't it?
My favorite, I think, Evil Dead scene is in Evil Dead 2, and it's the one where he's picking up the plates and smashing them on his head.
Yeah,
if you watch that scene, he's such a good body comedy actor, Bruce Campbell, because it is like his arm is completely independent of him, and he's fighting against it, and he kind of temporarily falls down, but it's almost like something's pulling him up. He's so fucking good in that film. He's good in the first one, but as we've said, Ash is weak as fuck in the first one. The second one, his body comedy is so fucking Chaplin, Three Stooges, but all condensed into one person.
He does do a good job of making sure he can't lift the bookcase off himself. He's like hugging that bookcase with the other hand.
So, yeah, I do flip-flop between the two, but as controversial as it is, I would say the second one, you know.
Okay.
Second one's the best, and Army of Darkness is...
totally fucking...
I love Army of Darkness. I just, because it's basically, if someone's turned around, like, say it didn't exist, and you read the, you know, the lies and rumours on the internet of what films are coming out, and there was like, oh, Sam Raimi is going to do like a Ray Harryhausen-esque fantasy horror film starring Bruce Campbell, you'd be like, holy shit, that sounds fucking awesome. But I think, again, it's because it didn't give people what they wanted necessarily, but like, you've already done the same film twice. You've got to do something quite fucking different. And yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, like we say about Gremlins. Yeah. I think we're talking about Gremlins just as much as we're talking about Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Gremlins 2. If anyone, like, in that production meeting, going, right, one of the gremlins is going to be made of electricity, one of them's going to be made out of fruit.
And one's going to be a sexy lady.
One's going to be a sexy lady. And you're just like, it's so, two is so different from one. Yeah. And Army of Darkness is so different. Yeah. You can watch that film without watching... I mean, could you imagine somebody mistaking the film franchise and watching the first Evil Dead and then Army of Darkness and going, what the fuck happened to Ash? Yeah. What the hell's going on here?
And the thing is, there's this little group of films, like pre-internet films, like Army of Darkness, Ghostbusters 2, Gremlins 2, and maybe Die Hard 2, that I always thought were fucking great. And everyone goes, no, they're all fucking awful. They stink. They don't make sense. They don't. It's like, hang on. And then they get reappraised by the second generation of people. And we go, I always fucking like them. What's wrong with it? Yeah, stop complaining. Yeah.
What is your consensus, Greg, on Evil Dead 2? Is it a remake? Because a lot of people go, it's not a remake, and it's not a reimagining, and it's not a reboot. And I'm like, well, can you please tell me what the fuck it is then? Nobody seems to be able to categorise Evil Dead 2.
Okay. I mean, my opinion on Evil Dead 2 is that it's technically a better movie than the first one. I kind of prefer the first one. If I had to watch one or the other right now, I'd probably watch the first one, even though we've literally just watched it. I'd probably watch it again. Although the second one is fucking great as well. In terms of what it is, I'm going to have my cake and eat it too, and I'm going to say that it's both a remake and a sequel at the same time, because the first 5 minutes of Evil Dead 2 is kind of a remake of the first one. It's like, just in case you haven't seen the first Evil Dead, this is basically what happens.
Yeah.
It's like, it's Ash, a bunch of people, it's him and his girlfriend gets possessed. Boom. And then it's like almost like a totally new story afterwards.
So, I would stick the label of reimagining to it.
I think you love that reimagining tag, don't you?
For years, nobody really knew how to describe a film that was like... I think Tim Burton invented the term reimagine when he did his Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
And everyone went, this isn't fucking Planet of the Apes. What is this? He went, it sort of is. It's kind of like reimagined it and...
A film that Sam Raimi was asked to direct before Tim Burton.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
I thought I think that would be quite good, actually.
Well, I have got a little game, if we can quickly interject with...
of course.
I've got some films that... In the Evil Dead Companion, which is a book I got free when I was working
You got for free. I'm doing inverted quotations.
I was working for Electronics Boutique, so that's a long time ago.
Wow, is that...
yeah, like back in the old
days.
Back in the old days, where games were written out on runes. And they were giving... When you bought the... I think it was the first PlayStation game, they gave you this book as a free gift. So, obviously, I've got my staff copy. And it's fantastic. And right, it's got... If you can find a copy of it, it's the Evil Dead Companion. Buy it. It still holds up. It's brilliant. And there's a thing at the back. The films Sam Raimi didn't make. Now,
if I give you guys the
title, and this has just come to me, so we're just working out the kinks, but I think it's going to work. You guys say, bloody good or bloody awful?
Right.
Now, he is down to, I'll ask Greg for this one first, Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, which went on to be made by Jay Roach. Would that be bloody good or bloody awful? Sam Raimi's Austin Powers.
I can't imagine that, so I'd say bloody awful.
Yeah, you know, Tom...
Bloody awful. I mean, let's not forget, he did direct Spider-Man 3.
Right.
That's the scale of Sam Raimi. Evil Dead 2 or Spider-Man 3.
Now, here's one. Here's one for you, Tom, because it features Nicolas Cage. Who is your favourite actor? Yeah?
Yeah.
Everyone knows that. So bye, Tom. Nicolas Cage stuff, everyone. Send it to the show.
Fucking.
Yeah,
get on with it.
Face-off. Sam Raimi's Face-off.
I think... I think Face Off is perfect the way it is. Okay. But I would love to see Sam Raimi's bloody good.
A reimagining.
Yeah, a reimagining. What do you reckon, Greg?
I think that'd be awesome. It's just I can't imagine Sam Raimi directing like fight scenes. So no. John Woo works really well for those kind of scenes. But for the batshit insanity, yeah, I would like to see
Has Sam Raimi ever directed Nicolas Cage in anything? Just because that's a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
Fucking Bruce Campbell and Nicolas Cage in a scene. Out insane in each other would be brilliant.
Well, there is an unmade film of Dracula from a script by Kevin Jarre. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Right.
As yet unmade. So maybe that could be the... If they're listening, guys...
Fucking Bruce Campbell is Dracula, Nicolas Cage is Renfield.
Right.
Done.
We're a couple more here. Let's have a look. What have we got? What's interesting? Apparently, as you said... okay. Here we go, Greg. Sam Raimi's Sleepy Hollow. Well, he mentioned Tim Burton, so...
I'm not a massive fan of that film, but it's very Tim Burton. But that could just be the way he did it. He did it as a Tim Burton film. I just can't imagine...
That's the tipping point in Tim Burton's career. That film's not good, but it's not awful. But from that point onwards, everything's a shitter version of Sleepy Hollow in Tim Burton's career. I would say bloody good, because I imagine that would be a bit like Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah, yeah. And finally... this one to Tom first. Last Action Hero. Sam Raimi, Last Action Hero.
Oh god, bloody awful. Yeah. I mean, that film, I don't even like Last Action Hero really, but yeah, I don't think anyone can improve that.
No,
but there you go.
Greg? Awful, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen Last Action Hero for years, in fairness, so I don't know. Cool. So in terms of The Evil Dead, so the original, we all like the film, so instead of rating the film out of 5, basically we recommend the film.
Unreservedly.
It's a good film, yeah.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen it for any reason, please fucking watch it. Now, in terms of whether it's a good date movie or a bad date movie, I'm going to post this in a slightly different way from when you guys have been on the show before. So would you say it's a good date movie or a bad date movie?
Good.
I'd say it's good. I think it's fun. I think there have probably been many examples of this being used as a date movie. I think everyone watches this film as a teenager with boys and girls. With people your age at the time, let me phrase that a little bit better. I think it is a standard date movie. I think it's done the rounds many a time.
And I think like when they said they're making it, 25% of revenue came from the drive-in, so it would have
which
been,
is date movie territory.
Yeah, I think it's the ultimate date movie.
There you go, the ultimate date movie, and it's passed the test, as you say. 25% revenue coming from drive-throughs. Yeah. Which is all just about couples and, you know, the guy laughing at it, laughing off that he's not scared, and the girl pretending she's scared, and everyone, as they said in the, again, director's commentary, people shouting at the screen, "You stupid idiot," you know.
Don't go up there.
You know, it's a great date movie, you know.
Yeah, I did a poll on Twitter, at Worst Date Movies, basically sort of asking if this was a good date movie or a bad date movie, and the overwhelming consensus was that it was a good date movie.
Excellent. Well,
I think if I was using
the... Done it, Greg. You've put the nail on the head,
yeah. Other than the tree rape, you basically can get away watching it. It's quite intense, and it's fairly violent, but other than that tree rape scene, it's a really, really good horror film. And I think, you would get sort of the desired reaction out of people. It would generally scare people. I've got quite an interesting sort of little story. It's quite weird. There's a girl that I used to go out with many years ago, and she didn't really watch horror movies. The only horror movies she would ever watch were horror comedies. She said the only way she could watch a horror movie is if there was comedy in it. So she liked Shaun of the Dead and Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2.
Yeah,
they were like the ones that she could watch. So yeah, so she would happily watch this, in spite of a couple of things maybe in it that, you know, like I said, the tree rape, but
haven't aged well.
Yeah. Okay, so if for whatever reason you don't own this on DVD or Blu-ray, so the version that we watch is Region 2 Anchor Bay, which I have somewhere. Now the version that Tom has got,
it's delightful.
This.
I don't know why I'm holding up to the radio.
Yes.
Look into your speakers.
Imagine, close your eyes and imagine that you have, like, a Book of the Dead. with DVDs in
it. Yeah, with DVD. And then for some reason it comes with a free copy of Running Time. So Bruce Campbell.
Wow.
They must have had a lot of those knocking around the warehouse.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And has that got all three films in it?
No, that's just... It's all this effort just for the one film. Well, two films if you include Running Time.
And that came out quite a few years ago.
This is
it?
Old. This is probably quite expensive now and to track down. But it's even in the book's designed by the guy that did the original special effects on the film, T. Yeah. Sullivan.
Right. It hasn't Tom really Sullivan. Deteriorated.
No, yeah, normally this kind of robbery stuff falls apart. I mean, maybe we'll get a picture of this on your on the Twitter feed. But yeah, this was a thing for years.
Yeah.
Maybe it's made of actual human flesh and skin.
It's very squishy.
Yeah. And it smells a bit funny.
Yeah, give it a squeeze.
It is very
give it a
squishy,
squeeze.
Actually.
Yeah, maybe that's just you.
Yeah. Squishy and smells funny. That's me.
Yes. Now,
yes.
If you can't get that version, because it looks fucking awesome, I'm not going to lie, the best version apparently to get on DVD is a Region 1 Anchor Bay Ultimate Edition of The Evil Dead. Or if you can get all three films in a box set, obviously I recommend. Now, very interesting little side note is it is also available from Sony, but it's been tweaked by Sam Raimi. So there were, in the director's commentary, he mentioned a couple of things that maybe he didn't like or he think looked that good. So, for example, there's a scene near the beginning where the car's going over a bridge and you can see someone in the background who you're not meant to see.
Yeah.
He's cut that out. So it's
he's
not
Lucas'd
like,
it.
Yes. I was just about to say, you can't Lucas films, man.
Well, that's what he's done. So if you buy a newer version of this film...
Added more Ewoks in the background of the camera.
He's not done a full, like, Ridley Scott and Blade Runner type thing where he's changed the ending or anything. It's just little things here and there, like a George Lucas, like you said, where he's tweaked it. So if you don't want that version, if you want the original version, just bear that in mind if you're looking to buy it. But yeah, you can buy it basically...
That's my favourite part of the film.
Anywhere,
that
all
guy,
over the
that
world.
That guy, yeah.
Cool. So, I want to thank Tom and Scott very much for appearing on the show. Thanks,
thank
guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been great. It's
been fucking awesome. As I said, if you have not done so already, you can follow me on Twitter @WorstDateMovies. And I will see you on the very next show.